ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachinabarhi. This is text number 5 this morning, correct? Buddhim tu pramadam vidyan mamaham iti yatkritam yam adishtaya deheshmin puman bhunte akshabir. There's actually an A there it's, the word is akshabir, because when the words come together with a vowel in front of it, the A is merged with the E. Gunan buddhim tu pramadam vidyan namaham iti yatkritam yam adishtaya deheshmin Man bhunte kshabir gunan buddhim tu pramadam vidyan mamaham iti yatkritam yam adishtaya deheshmin Uman bhunte kshabir gunan buddhim tu pramadam vidyan mamaham iti yatkritam yam adishtaya deheshmin Uman bhunte kshabir gunan
buddhim tu pramadam vidyan
Thank you.
Intelligence. Tu then. Ramadam, the young woman. Puranjani. Vidya. One should know. Mama. My. Aham. I. Iti. Thus. Yat kritam.
done by intelligence.
Yam.
Which intelligence?
Adishtaya.
Taking shelter of.
Dehe.
In the body.
Asmin.
This.
Puman.
Living entity.
Bhunkte.
Suffers and enjoys.
Akshabihi.
By the senses.
Gunan.
The modes of material nature.
Translation. The great sage Narada continued. The word pramada, mentioned in this regard, refers to material intelligence or ignorance. It is to be understood as such. When one takes shelter of this kind of intelligence, he identifies himself with the material body. Influenced by the material consciousness of I and mine, he begins to enjoy and suffer through his senses. Thus the living entity is entrapped. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In material existence, so-called intelligence is actually ignorance. When intelligence is cleared up, it is called buddhi yoga. In other words, when intelligence is dovetailed with the desires of Krishna, it is called buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, Krishna says, Tesham sattvata yuktanam bhajattam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Real intelligence means linking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When this is done, the Supreme Personality of Godhead from within gives one the real intelligence by which one can return home back to Godhead. Intelligence in the material world is described in this verse as pramada, because in material existence the living entity falsely claims things to be his. He thinks, I am the monarch of all I survey. This is ignorance. Actually, nothing belongs to him. Even the body and the senses do not belong to him, for they are given to him by the grace of the Lord to satisfy his different propensities through the material energy. Nothing actually belongs to the living entity, but he becomes mad after everything, claiming, this is mine, This is mine. This is mine. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. This is called illusion. Nothing belongs to the living entity, but he claims that everything belongs to him. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that this false intelligence be purified. Chito darpana marjanam. When the mirror of intelligence is polished, the real activities of the living entity begin. This means that when a person comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, his real intelligence acts. At that time, he knows that everything belongs to Krishna and nothing belongs to him. As long as one thinks that everything belongs to him, he is in material consciousness, and when he knows perfectly that everything belongs to Krishna, he is in Krishna consciousness. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nikti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaudavari Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavari Paschacha Desa Tarine Om Gyanam Timaran Dasya Ganandana Chalakaya Chaksur Unmiritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Japatitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. And now Narad Muni here in this verse is continuing his explanation of the allegory, the symbolic story of Paranjana, who has found himself after wandering through many bodies. He's in the human form of life now, the city of nine gates. And in this description, he wanders through this. Well, we have a description of the city. I'll skip over that part, because different parts of the city symbolically represent different parts of the material body. And then we come to this part. This is in chapter 25. Then it says here, on the outskirts of that city, that is in the suburbs, just outside the main part, were many beautiful trees and creepers encircling a nice lake. Also surrounding that lake were many groups of birds and bees that were always chanting and humming. So on the outskirts of the city, there's like a park, a garden that's being described here, with trees and creepers and so on. So Prabhupada says that here, symbolically, this garden means that there are arrangements for sexual activity. Let's go on. The branches of the trees standing on the bank of the lake receive particles of water carried by the spring air from the falls coming down from the icy mountains. So the water droplets coming down, cold water droplets from the waterfalls in the mountains, Prabhupada represents material rasa, feelings for sex enjoyment, and so on. He describes this garden a little more. Then it says, while wandering here and there in that wonderful garden, King Paranjana suddenly came into contact with a very beautiful woman. Now the word here for this woman is pramada, which is the word that Narada Muni is explaining in this verse. The word pramada. Pramada with a feminine ending, and it means Yeah, a young woman who's available for sexual pleasure. That's the meaning of pramada. The word, the verb pramad means to enjoy, to have a good time, to goof off, to neglect your duties. Then from that you get the word pramada, with a second A as long, which means insane, and so on. So here's this pramada, pramada uttamam, a very beautiful woman who's walking there without any engagements. So here, he's saying what is this means, this pramada, this beautiful woman. Pramadam, the young woman, and of course in the allegory King Paranjana marries her. She becomes Paranjani, his queen. But what she represents, he says here, the word pramada mentioned in this regard refers to buddhi, that is to say, material intelligence in this case, or ignorance, because it is this intelligence by which one goes mamaham. You see in this verse, mamaham iti. Iti in Sanskrit, which means thus, has the function of quotation marks. Whatever goes before it is in quotation marks. So mamaham iti means one is thinking or saying my and I. That is to say, I am the Lord of all I survey, or I am the enjoyer, or I am the body, and mama, the sense objects, are mine. Especially speaking here of pramada. So the word pramada mentioned in this regard refers to material intelligence or ignorance. It is to be understood as such when one takes shelter of this kind of intelligence, he identifies himself with the material body. Influenced by the material consciousness of I and mine, he begins to enjoy and suffer through his senses. Thus, the living entity is entrapped. So, especially this acquirement what Prabhupada refers to as bad intelligence or not real intelligence, is specifically related to sexual desire. Let's try to understand here this idea of intelligence and what it is. Of course, there's manas, buddhi, ahankara. These are the three elements of the subtle body: mind, intelligence, false ego. So this is psychology given in the Vedas, and it's much more subtle and precise than the kind of psychology we see in the West. They don't understand these distinctions. Everything's all jumbled together. But here there's a very clear idea of there's one thing, one kind of element, which is called manas, a subtle material element. And then more subtle and different from manas is buddhi, which we translate as intelligence. There's really the only way to translate buddhi is to say buddhi and understand what it means. Because then what we mean by intelligence, the ability to pass certain kinds of tests or things like that, that's not buddhi. Then above that is this ahankar, the sense of myself, and especially since it's a material element, the sense of myself as the body, my false ego, my false, my wrong idea of myself. Then the other thing, the next thing is the soul, which is not material. Although there's, when it's in this state, it's manifest as contaminated consciousness. This is contaminated consciousness, but this, the consciousness itself does not arise from either the gross or the subtle body. It's independent. So this is the Vedic understanding. So a great deal of the Bhagavad Gita it begins with the discussion of buddhi yoga, which Prabhupada says eventually is identical with bhakti yoga. Particularly we need to understand what buddhi is. Prabhupada mentions in one place that there are different platforms of human existence. And on those platforms we have a different kind of culture. And he refers to the culture of the mind, the culture of the intelligence, and the culture of the soul. Or rather, the culture of the body, the culture of the mind. Yeah, four cultures. The culture of the body, culture of the mind, culture of intelligence, and culture of the soul. But Prabhupada says that the culture of the body is going on in the world in various places, like restaurants, clubs, those health spas where people go to exercise and lose weight, and places to make the body nice and enjoy the senses. This is the culture of the body. We take care of the body and its demands in various ways. And above that is the culture of the mind. This, Prabhupada says, are the various kinds of educational institutions. Now when he says mind here, he's talking about manas. Educational institutions, colleges, universities, places like that, where people, ideas are entertained, accepted, and rejected. Some theory is developed, everybody gets into it, they play with it, they explore it, they get tired of it, they go on to another theory. And then they think about this. This is called the mental platform. Prabhupada refers to this all the time about the mental platform and mental speculation. You get some ideas, some theory. You get absorbed in it sometime, and you reject it. And this is exactly what's going on. If you look at the history of philosophy in the West, you see there's so many different isms, one after another. Realism, empiricism, idealism, and so on. Pragmatism, this ism, that ism. So many schools of thought. And in philosophy, you know, at one point everybody is empiricist. Then everybody gets tired of empiricism, they become idealists, and that becomes old-fashioned, and they go on to something else. It is not, a philosopher actually has pointed out, it is not that in this kind of changing of theories that some position is refuted and found to be wrong. It's just that somehow or other people get tired of it and go on to something else. So this change of intellectual fashions that you see in the universities and also in science is almost like the changing of clothing according to this year's fashion. Skirts are long, then everybody gets tired of them. Somebody says, skirts are short. Oh, okay, then skirts are short. Then some rich man says, this year's color is pink. And then somehow everybody wears pink. And then somebody announces, pink is passé, it's out. Now the color is red. You know, it's everybody changed. No reason whatsoever. It's just the mental platform. You accept and reject simply on the basis of sense gratification. This is the mind. So he says, even in the idea of you know, lofty ideas of thought, philosophy, and science, and poetry, it's a similar situation. It's the culture of the mind. Then above that, Prabhupada says, is the culture of intelligence. This he identifies with the Bhagavad Gita. So right away we can see that in the institutions of society there is no culture of intelligence. It only goes as far as the mind. People are on the mental platform. And very rarely do you ever see anybody even get a glimpse of what is higher than the mind, which is intelligence. And the Bhagavad Gita is really about the formation, Bildung, of intelligence. Because it's announced in the beginning, we're going to talk about Buddhi Yoga, the training or the proper formation of intelligence. And when we see when intelligence is actually properly cultivated, what happens? You surrender to Krishna. Then, beyond the culture of intelligence is the culture of the soul. Prabhupada said this is embodied in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when intelligence is cultivated, one surrenders to Krishna. And that happens, surrender completely to Krishna. Sarva dharman puritja ja mame kam sarajam nam vaja. You give up everything else and you take shelter of Krishna and nothing else. Mam ekam. Krishna says, me alone. Saranam Raja. This is intelligence that's now perfectly formed. And Bhagavatam begins at that point. Dharma projita kaitavo atra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. This Bhagavatam is meant for those who have given up all materialistically motivated dharmas and now have become completely pure at heart and so on. So these are the different platforms. So actually, if we really want to understand intelligence and how the proper formation of intelligence or training of intelligence, this is Bhagavad Gita. Now, what is intelligence? Intelligence is actually working all the time. We cannot do anything without some intelligence. Because the mind accepts and rejects in terms of immediate sense gratification. Now, for example, we put something in our mouth. If it tastes good, we enjoy it. If it tastes bad, we spit it out. This is the mind. It immediately does that. So suppose I'm sick and it's necessary for me to put in the mouth some medicine that tastes very bad. I put it in my mouth, immediately spit it out. However, if I have received instructions from a doctor who informs me that I need to take this medicine in order to become in the future well, then, in spite of the immediate action of the mind to spit it out, I swallow it anyway. So I can override the mind. And so that ability to override the mind or to train the mind so that we can perform any long-term goal-directed activities is intelligence. A child, the intelligence is undeveloped. Children are all mind. And by the parents, the authority of the parents, their intelligence is developed. If you give the child the bitter medicine, they will spit it out immediately. And the mother has to say, no, you must take it. You go, I don't want to take it anyway. And you have to go through a thing until the child becomes trained that sometimes it is necessary not to satisfy the senses. After all, you have to get up and go to school every morning. Who wants to get out of a nice warm bed on a cold morning? Immediately, the mind says, no, stay in bed. Don't get out. It's unpleasant. If we just followed the mind, the whole human race would never get out of bed in the morning until they're as hungry. But we have been trained to not completely follow the dictations of the mind. So if we have no intelligence, we're just crazy. We can't do anything. So there has to be some intelligence, and that intelligence is formed always by some direction from authority. We are trained to do certain things. We get up in the morning and we brush our teeth. Because usually, as our mother said, you must brush your teeth. Isn't that fun to brush your teeth? It's not pleasant. It's a chore. But still, and you have to, you know, I've been through this with kids, you know, I have three children. Have to get them to do all this stuff every morning, take a bath, brush your teeth, so on. They don't want to do it. So you give them instruction, and then gradually that instruction goes inside. It forms a habit. That means it becomes embedded in the mind. Mind is also the place of habit. It's just very... You get certain habits as the mind has been trained. So among other things, the mind gets the habit of sense gratification. It associates various... You know, there's this in psychology, Western psychology, there's the famous experiments of the Russian psychologist Pavlov with his dogs. You know these things? You know how he... Pavlov had some dogs that he would feed. They would be hungry, and he would feed them, and when he would feed them, a bell would ring. And so then he discovered, after doing this for some period of time, they would eat, a bell would ring, and then they would eat, that simply by ringing the bell, they would start producing saliva. They would get hungry. Simply by because that bell was associated with food. So just a ringing of a bell, the animals would go hungry. This connection is made in the mind and it becomes a habit. So the mind is full of habits like that. And as most people are raised, they are the habits of sense gratification. There has to be some amount of control. Otherwise, you can't walk across a room. You notice a little child, they can't get to the other side of the room because they get distracted by this, attracted by this, attracted by that. They never go there. So to have any directed activity toward a goal, that requires some intelligence. So always intelligence is working. So, and we have made habits. Here's another way that intelligence works. When we see something, we can recognize it and give it a name. So this phenomena of recognition is also given by intelligence. You may see, you may have the experience that you see somebody, you see a face, and it's just a face, and then suddenly you recognize that person. Something happens. Huh? Now you know the name, you know who this person is. So every time we see something, we recognize it. I see this shape sitting here before me, but I recognize this is a mudanga. So by intelligence, through the language I've learned from my authorities and so on, because we learn language from authorities, we also learn to recognize things and put the whole world in order. This is this, this is that, this is this. That's why I can find my way around. So in the third canto, Kapila Dev says that, and one thing intelligence does is it enables to recognize things. So our whole mental set, our mindset, our Weltanschauung, that we just live with as a matter of habit, has actually been formed by intelligence. And unfortunately, for most of us, it has been badly formed. Because the whole way we look at the world, the whole way we see things, is in terms of sense gratification and enjoyment. So this is what Prabhupada calls material existence. This intelligence, the whole direction of my purpose in life, the whole mindset I have is to enjoy in the material world. Everybody automatically thinks like this. They are enjoyers. And actually, it is ignorance. So the intelligence is going off in that way. When we change, if we take up the study of Bhagavad Gita, our intelligence is directed in another way. And we see we learn to see everything not as I am the enjoyer and I am the controller, but that Krishna is the enjoyer and Krishna is the controller. Everything belongs to Krishna. So that a man who grows up in a material consciousness, he sees a woman instinctively, naturally, immediately thinks, will she be good for sex or not? And I think women do the same thing to men. They simply accept and reject on the basis of sense gratification. Right? Even if they're not going to do anything, that's how they look. This is the material intelligence. We've been taught to do like that. And people, of course, dress themselves to be attractive in that manner and so on. And behave in such a way as to be attractive in that manner. So we are seeing the world through this kind of polluted intelligence as the enjoyer. And that has to be changed if we want to go back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada, how strong this is, came to me when I was listening to one conversation Prabhupada was having with an Indian gentleman who said to him, who was challenging him, because the Indian gentleman was a Christian. And like many people who had been converted to Christianity by missionaries in India, part of the conversion process was to tell them that Krishna is immoral. How can you worship somebody like Krishna? And so this man said to Prabhupada, how can you worship a god who is an adulterer? That is, has sex with other men's wives. Huh? How can you worship a god who is an adulterer? Prabhupada replied to him immediately, He said, Krishna is not an adulterer. You are the adulterer. He said, all women belong to Krishna. That's what he said. I'm sure this is a pious guy who was married and only had sex with his wife. Prabhupada said, you are the adulterer. All women belong to Krishna. And I have to confess that I felt this kind of stab in my heart, which was, all women? Not even one for me? So, but a pure vision is all women, all women, or the other way around, all men, but they belong, everyone belongs to Krishna. I'm not the enjoyer, Krishna is the enjoyer. This is what Prabhupada means by clearing up. He uses this phrase, intelligence is cleared up. We have to get away. Our mind right now, we see everything in terms of sense gratification. I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. And this intelligence, this contaminated intelligence, means that we have acquired the false ego. Mamaham. We identify self with the material body. This happens whenever there's sense gratification. I mentioned this yesterday or last night. The identification with the body increases. You cannot. Every time we enjoy, we more and more deepen our misconception, and therefore we actually bound further into material nature. We suffer more and more. Here, for example, just to show you one place where Prabhupada discusses this, Arjuna has asked Krishna. How is it that a person is impelled to do sinful acts, even unwillingly? I don't want to do something sinful, but still, somehow, I am forced. And Krishna says, Kama Asha, Krodha Asha. It is lust. Lust here, Kama means sex desire, but there's a more general sense, is the desire to, meaning to enjoy all the senses, kama. They're all varieties of sex desire. To walk in a beautiful garden, that's kama. Because then you will encounter in there, pramada in the garden, the woman. And so all the sense, and Prabhupada mentions that when there's sexual enjoyment, then all the other senses become enlivened to enjoy. When one wants to have sex, then we also want to taste nice food, feel nice silken cloth, listen to beautiful music. So art, by the way, in the Indian classification, art, music, all this is considered kama. It's all, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And the category of kama is music, or any kind of aesthetic pleasure is considered kama. So this is kama, this desire to enjoy in the world, especially sex desire. Is there, and then that's what's the cause of this. Then he mentions, Krishna says, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So real knowledge is covered. So So Krishna says here, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the residence of lust. So Prabhupada has discussed this very nicely. He says the enemy, that is to say lust, has captured different strategic points in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses. So we have our different knowledge acquiring and active senses, but they all feed into the mind, which takes all the impressions and puts them together in a certain way. So that's why the mind is also called, it has been called in Europe, European philosophy, the common sense. That would be the sense that brings all the other senses together and unifies them. So mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir, you know, where water is stored, a reservoir. A storage place for water is called a reservoir of water. A reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. This is a nice description of the mind. The reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. We remember, when we think of anything, we think of sense pleasure. When we hear of anything, we think of sense pleasure. I always notice that sometimes when I have to be with relatives and they're eating some meal, they discuss past meals they have eaten in various places and how good it was there, and they went to this restaurant and this and that. And then they're planning their future. So that's the mind. All ideas of sense pleasure are stored up in there. And as a result, the mind and senses become the repositories, the storage places of lust. Next, the intelligent department. So lust has captured the mind and the senses. So next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. So that means the attention becomes directed towards sense gratification. Because where our attention is directed, that is also intelligence that governs that. So the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. I think, feel, and will. Mental functions are thinking, feeling, and willing. I think in terms of sense gratification, I feel in terms of sense gratification, and I will in terms of sense gratification. So that means the intelligence is now completely directed toward sense gratification. Then he says, intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted. So when a habit becomes very strong, it's called an addiction. Even when you don't want to do it, you have to do it. This is the definition of an addiction. People are trying to recover from addictions to cigarettes, to drugs, other kind of drugs of various kinds. They have treatment for sex addicts. But all sense gratification is an addiction. You just try to stop. Why do people want to stop cigarettes? Because they're addicted to this. And you think it's pleasure. It's actually, it tastes horrible. It fills your lungs with smoke. The first time you ever smoke a cigarette, it You get sick. But somehow or other, you become addicted and you think it's pleasure. And then you know it's killing you. So it really causes a huge amount of suffering. It kills you in the long run, and you keep on doing it, you can't stop. But actually, all sense gratification kills us. Prabhupada says he says death is an illusion we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. We don't die, we're eternal. Why do we have this idea and fear of death? Because we identify with the body. It's false. Why do we identify the body? Because of sense gratification. So it is sense gratification that is killing us. In other words, the whole material world looking at for enjoyment, all sense gratification, it's all a big cigarette. We become addicted and it kills us. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material world, enjoying the material senses, and mistakes this as true happiness. They claim they're happy. Huh? I mean, for many of people my generation, you know, this is the image of enjoyment. Bliss. Huh? In the movies. What happened to us? So people can be fooled like this. So anyway, this is the idea of what we mean by intelligence. It is intelligence which either directs us toward sense gratification or toward self-realization. And the controller or director of intelligence is actually the super soul. Krishna says this: I am situated in everyone's heart, and for me becomes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. When he says, from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, means remembrance of Krishna, forgetfulness of Krishna, knowledge of Krishna. The word for forgetfulness in Sanskrit in this verse is apohanam. Apohanam really literally means pushing away. So Prabhupada says like this: when we want to remember Krishna, Krishna gives us all facility to remember him. That's like through the intelligence. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam. When we want to remember Krishna, we have to, well, it's what we want. We are responsible for what we want. If we want to remember Krishna, then Krishna gives us the facility to remember. And when we want to forget, he gives us the facility to forget. That comes from Krishna. Prabhupada remarks somewhere, there are so many very clever arguments. There's no God. God is dead. Everything comes from matter. He said, where do these arguments come from? He said, they come from Krishna. They want to forget Krishna, so he gives them the arguments. Krishna does it. So we want to fly away from Krishna. Krishna's the wings. So it's up to us. So that's why he says, one, we show Krishna we are serious. We have to show Krishna that we're serious. I mean, he's in our heart, so he wants to see. I cannot just say, yes, Krishna, I want to remember you, but at the same time, please give me all this sense gratification. No, we have to choose. Huh? It's like light or darkness. is one or the other. Where there's light, there's no darkness. Where there's darkness, there's no light. So this is what our business is. Really, most of the problem of Krishna consciousness, I think, is just making up our minds. We should understand that it is either Krishna or Maya. As long as we want some Krishna and some Maya, then we will stay stuck in this material world. So we should at least progress. I want more and more Krishna and less Maya. Prabhupada recognizes that this is a gradual process, because it is hard to give up addiction. Prabhupada gave a devotee an advice. The devotee came to him and said, "Prabhupada, somebody who's becoming a devotee, I'm addicted to cigarettes." And Prabhupada said, how much do you smoke? And he says, one pack a day. So Prabhupada just didn't say, just stop. He said, okay, tomorrow you smoke a pack. Pack contains 20 cigarettes. The next day, you smoke 19. The next day, you smoke 18. And so on. So in 20 days, you're... So you have to be practical in this matter. It is a gradual process. But the thing is, one has to be determined. This is intelligent. I understand what the goal is, and I should be determined. Determined means I stick to the goal. If I slip from the path, I get back on again. That's intelligence. Remember, for long-term, goal-directed activity, I slip from the path, immediately I get up and I get back on again. And I'm always eager at least to take the next step. Surrender to Krishna is a gradual process. We think we're surrendered, and then Krishna shows what he wants more. And we do that, and now we think we're surrendered, and then Krishna shows what he wants more. We go, But we have to take each step as it comes, one step at a time, and stay on this path. There's a description of intelligence also in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that's very interesting. I can never remember the verse numbers. Yancha Sarvabhutanam. It begins. 69. Yanisha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagarti Samyami. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And conversely, and the time of awakening for all beings, what is daytime for everybody else, is night for the introspective sage. This means, here's a person who's in Krishna consciousness, this self-controlled, or the Pashato Muni, the sage who sees. The sage who sees. What everybody else, what they see is night, to him is daytime. They're in the same place, same room, whatever. They see night, he sees day. What's daytime for him is night for them. So, how Prabhupada explains. There are two classes of intelligent men. See how he's using the word intelligent now? It's not like the normal Western sense of intelligent. There are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification, and the other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. So a person who's interested in sense gratification, he comes here to this temple, and he looks around, he says, there's nothing happening here. This place is dead. There's nothing going on. Once I was describing to somebody the four regulative principles, he listened to this and he was just amazed, and he said, then what do you do? On the other hand, activities of materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. They have no idea what's going on. At the same time, we may go into some gambling casino or something, and we look around and say, my God, there's nothing happening here. I'm no interest whatsoever. It's true. I mean, one time, to use a bathroom, I went into a casino. It was weird because I was in a dhoti and everything. And here are these rows of slot machines, and people were saying, shh, shh, shh. It was just like hell. It just looked like hell. Cigarette smoke. And it was just hellish. But those people thought this was heaven, you know. what's night for everybody else is day for us, and what's day for them is night for us. The difference is intelligence. So, anyway, these are some of the descriptions. Maybe there's a lot more we could say about this, but I'll stop now and see if any questions or comments about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that we have to cut down thinking of Maya and reduce our material activities, the addictions, mm-hmm. to a sense better. There is the example of the Sudama Brahmana. You may remember in Krishna book his wife was very poor, they were very poor. His wife went to him and he said, you have a friend of the greatest personality, Sri Krishna, why don't you ask him for some things so we can live better? And then he was rewarded with a whole castle. But often
wife got a makeover too, right?
Yeah. But often,
you know this expression, makeover? They have TV programs like this. They get some woman who's like, you know, not very good looking, and then they take her to the beauty parlor, change her hair, makeup. Now they do it with surgery too, these TV shows. They call it a makeover. His wife.
But often devotees don't live in such opulent positions, because most of the devotees make it a point not to have to do with wealth. And all these things. So now in Germany we have this very fatal financial situation, as you know. And don't you think this is because devotees just don't want money? So now they have the situation, they have no money. But in some way something went wrong, because even to maintain temples for Krishna you need some.
Yeah. Well, sometimes there's two things, I think. At least for us, it's quite all right to want money for Krishna service. But sometimes in the past we have been given money for Krishna service and we have used it for other things. Then Krishna will take it away. This has happened a few times in our movement. We've had a whole lot of money and then it suddenly disappears practically overnight. And often the money turned out to have been really an illusion. There was once one zone that was renowned for its opulence, and when the acharya of that place, who was lived amid this opulence, turned out to have every facility for material enjoyment except a woman. You know, he finally had to complete the thing. He fell down, and then it turned out beneath all the opulence were piles and piles of debts.
Mm.
And when you worked it all out, the castles were sold, and one after another, there was something like illusory opulence, as it turns out. So we've seen that. And I think that as long as material opulence is a danger to the devotees, Krishna will not give it. So the best way to get it, is to give up all ideas for having it. That has to be used in Krishna's service. Then Krishna will give us whole countries. So long as we don't misuse it. Because it's said that Krishna will never give a devotee anything that will harm him. That's why devotees tend to be poor, or the Shaivites are rich. Remember, this comes up in the Bhagavatam, this question. That's one reason. It's a question of how we use things in Krishna's service. I was going to say something else, but now it's gone. It got out of my head like that. We should be opulent. The other thing is that if you have opulence, is people will be attracted for all the wrong reasons. And that also is not good.
So. Yeah, this is Sudama Brahmana. Yet there's an explanation of both. Prabhupada Prabhupada explains, other commentators also, that this Sudama, actually, he did not want any opulence.
Hmm.
He was completely off that platform, mm-hmm. and he had proven he was living in poverty, but he didn't mind, only his wife minded.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Krishna and just to be with Krishna, actually
he forgot to ask him, right?
Yes. So she can't have this attitude because he was transcendental to material enjoyment. Therefore, Krishna gave him this
right. So
he could do the service because he knew he would not misuse it for his own purposes.
So the point is, it is not necessary to ask Krishna. It's only necessary to ask for devotional service. And then Krishna will give all facility. No devotee should really worry. A devotee who surrendered to Krishna is taken care of by Krishna. You don't have to worry. Even though you may not have any material basis of support, you really don't have to worry about it. Krishna takes care of his devotees. He really does. Just stop worrying about it. The German government may not have any money. Krishna's got all money. He's got all wealth. And if we just engage ourselves in Krishna's service, everything will come. If we have to go through different things to get money and so on, well, we need to go through that process. That's all that's good for us. Because money also has to be respected. She's Lakshmi Devi. She's the goddess of fortune. And so, you know, it cannot be misused or be careless with it or use it for the wrong things or for sense gratification and so on. But I think Krishna is just waiting for us to show that we're serious. So the best way to get money is to give up all desire for it. Anything else? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.